Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Welcome back, everybody. We're delighted to have you back with us here on Close Up Talk Radio. Today, we're going to talk about one of the most difficult jobs anyone can have, and that is being a caregiver. I know you may have read about what it's like to be a caregiver, but you know, there's nothing like talking to somebody who is a caregiver or has been a caregiver to learn about what it's like. And the fascinating thing is no one knows when they may be thrust into the job of being a caregiver for a loved one, a family member who has an accident or something happened, and all of a sudden they can't do things for themselves, and they really, really need others to help them survive throughout the day, to get up to go to the bathroom or to eat, you know, because they can't go into the kitchen to fix themselves lunch, breakfast, whatever it might be. Anyway, we have a great guest with us who has been with us before. I love this gentleman. His name is Maurice Jordan. He's an extraordinary gentleman whose wife came down with dementia. And Maurice wants to really speak to groups and use his time to help other people understand what it's like to become a caregiver and give them some really hard, you know, information on the kinds of things he's had to do for his wife, Tessie, to help her survive and thrive. Maurice has, you know, he has a remarkable career. He's had a remarkable career. One of the main jobs that he has had is where he met Tessie. He was a sous chef at the Hillcrest Country Club in Los Angeles, which is one of the most outstanding country clubs in the city of L.A., a lot of celebrity members there, but just a great club. And it was obviously a great credit to Maurice that he had that job. So we're going to talk to Maurice today. He's in L.A. about to talk to us now a little bit about why he wants to talk to others to help give them information on what it's like to be a caregiver, which is a job he was thrust into 7 years ago when Tessie came down suffering from dementia. So, Maurice, welcome back. It's great to hear you again and have you with us. And let me just ask you, well, first off, how are you? How are you doing out there? Are you drying out from the rain?
Yeah, we're starting to dry out. But I'd like to, you know, thank you and thank you, Change, so much for having me back on again. This is a great time for me to sit here and actually talk about Tessie. And, yeah, we're drying out from the rain, and we're just getting things back up and running. So,
no, no, you had a lot of rain in L.A. recently. Your office got flooded out. And when that happens, that's a pain in the neck to have to go through that, getting everything, you know, put back together again after you've been flooded. But I know you're still working on that. Let me ask you, why are you so interested in wanting to tell your story about being a caregiver? You know, to talk to groups and others. Of course, you can do it here on the radio like with us, but it's nothing like being in front of a group of you know, people who want to hear your story. But you want to do that. That's one of your main goals in doing this. Am I right?
Yes, you are right. I do. One thing I've done most of my life is change careers and different jobs. My two main careers, of course, being a chef for 30-plus years and being a broker for the past 20 years, a real estate broker. And I've done lots of things just for fun, you know, to try different things. And now I use it all to take care of Tessie. I color her hair, I trim her hair, give her manicures if I wanted to. I take care of her that way. I can match up her clothes because I've had experience in, you know, in the fashion world for a little bit, trying to do different things. But it all came down to this, Doug. It came down to what am I going to do now? And I think that everybody goes to that question. It's the first question you're going to do. And I thought that the best thing I can do is just try to keep things going the way they are and take care of myself the best way I can, seeing that I can work from home. I would have that opportunity. And I thought after meeting other people over the first two or three years, that they're having issues because there's a lot of inconsistency and with the taking care of their loved one. They either had too many nurses there, or they had the same one but not too many hours, or they're trying to take care of them while they're working a job outside of their home. It's just a lot of chaos for the person with dementia, Alzheimer's. And so I think if I can get a message out there to just try to be as consistent as you can, I think that will help a lot of people in a lot of situations that they find themselves in, especially the first few years. Those are the toughest.
Let me ask you something. What do you think the most necessary ingredients or attributes are necessary to have to be a good caregiver? I mean, you would know because you're doing it and you've been doing it now for 7 years. How would you answer that question? What do you need to have?
Well, besides patience, and a lot of them.
Yeah.
You need a lot of patience.
Answer number one, correct, patience.
Yes, it is. And you have to build up those patients by remembering that whatever they may do, it's not their fault. You have to remember that. And to get yourself to the point where you can start doing the right thing, you have to not feel guilty about doing certain things. You know, at the beginning, it was me. We used to go out for walks all the time. And then I started feeling, well, if I go out for a walk, I can't go out with her because she can't walk as fast as we used to. And so you got to go through that guilt thing as well. I think a lot of people go through that. So, you know, build up your patience. Do not feel guilty over whatever you may have to do for them to this better for them. I'll tell my wife, I'm going down to the office for a minute. I'll be right back. When actually I'm going up to show an apartment, and I'll be gone 20 minutes instead of 2 minutes. And then I come right back again. But I also have a camera in the living room where I can see her. So no matter where I go, I can just log on that app, and I can see she's still sitting there coloring or whatever it may be.
I think
the most important thing is try to think ahead of them. You know, try to think of what they may want before they want it.
Yeah, that's very important. Let's tell your story a little bit about when did you meet Tessie? How did you get the romance with her begin? And, how did it develop? How did you realize things were changing with her? Take me through that story a little bit, okay?
Yeah, sure. I came to Los Angeles for a job. I was living in Missouri, and I was leaving the company I was working with. I used to open hotels for different companies. And I wanted to get out of there, and a fellow chef that I've worked with several times with the Marriott Corporation and Bennett Hillcrest, he was looking for an executive sous chef, and I said, well, I'll fit the bill. And he said, well, it's okay if I'm your boss now, because I used to be his. I said, sure. No, I wash dishes to get back to California, not a problem. So that's how I got to L.A. I came here in 1999. And Tessie was already working here. At the time, she was working at the front desk as the supervisor. And one of her coworkers asked her if she can take the day off with her so Tessie can show her around because she was new to Los Angeles. And Tessie said, yes, we can do that. And I looked over because I was checking the mail, which all the mail was at the front desk. And I looked over and I just said, oh, gee, Tessie, I'm new to L.A. too. Can you show me around one day? I mean, she had this blank look on her face. And she said, okay. And I thought, wow, that was fun. I said, okay, I'll talk to you later. And I was just joking around. And then throughout the next week or so, I thought, you know what, she really is a nice lady. Maybe, I'll ask her out. So I invited her over to my friend's house Christmas Eve to help me decorate the house while they went away to see their family in Mexico. And that's how we started dating. It was just kind of like an off the top of my head, asked her out. And as we spent more time together, we started having feelings for each other. And we just went from one thing from dating to living together and eventually getting married.
That's a fascinating story.
She's a funny girl. She is a funny girl.
Yes. Yep. A really good sense of humor. Then the two of you were working. You were working at Hillcrest. She was still working there while you were together.
Yes.
Tell me, how long were you together before you began noticing Tessie changing? And what way was she changing, when dementia started to set in? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, like I say, we met in 1999, at the end of 1999, 2000. And she didn't start showing signs until around 2017, about 3 months before she retired. And even some of the people at work noticed it. One gentleman asked me, you know, do you notice, is Tessie forgetting things at home? And I knew she was, but you don't throw your wife under the bus and say, oh, yeah, I think she has issues. So I just said, you know what, Tom? She's getting ready to retire. She's got a lot to do. She's got to train somebody to take over her job. Her job is just not a regular job. He says, no, I know. I thought it was that too, you know, but I think he knew. And then she retired within two to three months after that conversation I had with the CFO. And when she got home, it was just little things. One, taking out the trash and not putting a bag back in again, something she never did because the trash is in the kitchen under the sink. And she never even took out the trash before because she didn't have to. That was
right.
The kitchen's my domain, you know.
That's your job.
And then
exactly.
One time she did, you know, she was getting frustrated. And I said, honey, what's the matter? And she spouted out, I'm having trouble with my memory, and I know I am. And that floored me. I mean, for her to recognize that, because I wasn't even fully there yet, but she was, I guess. And she knew what was going on at that time. And that was probably about 3 months after she retired. So within a six-month period, she realized that she had an issue. And the little things were, again, taking out the trash, spending time in the kitchen. She never did that. You know, straightening out the house, going around, straightening out the house. I mean, we shared the house clean, all that stuff. But she'd be moving stuff from table to table, counter to counter, and going back and doing it again. And something she had never done before. So you got to look for the little things.
Did you take her to
the big things?
Did you take her to a doctor at some point to try and get some advice from a doctor?
Not right away. Okay. I wanted to contact her family first, my family, you know, and I wanted to see. I guess I needed a little bit more evidence before I start going to doctors right away. But it wasn't long after that. I mean, like I said, it was 6 months before she really, 3 months she was showing signs, or she was still working. 3 months later, she said, I'm having trouble with my, and it was probably about maybe 6 months, 8 months after that, I took her to our doctor, and we referred to another doctor, of course, and we had some tests done, and it came back as dementia. And,
did the doctor tell you
the thing is,
what you could do? Let me just interrupt you a minute. Did the doctor give you advice on what one can do when dementia is becoming a serious problem? What did he tell you?
Yeah. Well, first thing he did is he recommended me a neurologist to go with, which we did. And neurologist, you know, interviewing us, her, and I didn't say anything, you know. And he congratulated me on that. Because most caregivers, they want to answer for their loved one. I didn't. I was trying to let her answer because this is early on. She got a couple of things, but not many. Then he prescribed a couple of drugs that were out there that would help slow it down. And so, of course, we followed that instruction. And that just led to a lot of constipation and a lot of aggravation. And it wasn't working. And plus, it cost a lot of money after the insurance kicked in as well.
Right.
So that was a dead-end street for us as far as I was concerned. I thought I could do a better job, you know, with her diet and the way she eats than trying to get her, trying to force her to when her body should be doing certain functions and stuff. And that's the first thing I started doing is taking care of her diet, making sure she was eating the proper things. We always did anyways, but I kind of laid off going out a lot to a lot of restaurants because you go out to a restaurant, you eat more. So I stopped that and just a lot of stuff and paying attention to her and seeing what
she's
her
very
needs
lucky.
Are, attending to her needs.
She's lucky that you are a chef and you probably prepare very, very
chef.
Good meals for her. Let
I'm
me
lucky
ask you something.
I was a chef.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, you also were working as a real estate, you know, that was your business.
Yes.
And you still do that. How could you continue your job of what you were doing and at the same time, you know, realized she needed care. Could you leave her alone for a while? I know you had a, you know, your phone hooked up to a camera.
Minutes at a time. Yeah, minutes at a time. Yeah, because she, like I said, I think because of all the consistency we had together, because there's nobody else in the household.
Right.
And that's another thing. People with dementia, Alzheimer's, you know, sometimes the house has a lot of people coming and going, and that confuses them. You know, it confuses them quite a bit. So I think we're fortunate that we don't have a whole lot of people coming and going. So
I
think it's very important that you keep – I'm sorry?
I said I would agree with that, that you don't have a lot of people coming and going. And don't worry about that telephone that's ringing. Okay? You're on the telephone.
No, I just shut it off. That was my other phone. I just shut
okay.
I forgot to turn it off. No, what I think what it is, Doug, is all my life I've been in the service industry, you know, from shining shoes to selling papers to being a dishwasher, being a chef so many years.
Wow.
I like being in the service industry. I like seeing people happy. It makes me happy to see people happy. And like I said, everything I've done over my lifetime, it just seems to – I fit the case to take care of her. You know, and I notice when we go out to groups, she's fine as long as there's something going on with dancing and singing. But if we're in somebody's house and just a lot of conversation and people walking back and forth and not one particular thing, she gets a little nervous, a little shaky like that. But if it's a dinner party, something like that, she's fine. And like I said, even my friend Rick, his wife came home. She said, "That's my home." Next day she had a seizure. They didn't know what it was. Because there was this was a lot of chaos. That's after being in a home for almost a year and a half, 2 years.
Wow.
So,
do you find that Tessie has forgotten a lot of things? Like, for example, where you two got married. Do you talk about that? Does she remember that?
Well, she doesn't remember it as far as, you know, I know she doesn't remember it, but she's
really
always reminded of it because I – when we wake up in the morning, I bring her up, we sit on the edge of the bed, and we have pictures on the wall, and every morning I say, "Look, honey, there we are. That's us, and it's our wedding picture."
Tell everybody where you got married. You went on a major trip to get married.
Well, I went back up to the Yosemite area, and of course, both Yosemite and that area. I lived up there for 6 years, and when I moved out of there, I told my pastor, who is a personal friend as well, said, "Well, if I ever get married again, I'm coming back here to get married." And he said, "I'll hold you to it." And so when Tessie and I were, you know, we knew it was time to do it, she said, "Well, you want to get married at the club to let us use the hall?" I said, no, we're going to Yosemite to get married. She said, "Okay."
All right. How about where you proposed to her? Tell me about that.
Well, that was a fun thing because the place I proposed to her, I never heard of until she said, you know, "We're going on vacation." And I said, "Where are we going?" Because she used to own a travel agency, so she was great at booking anything. And first she wanted to go to London so I can see Europe, never been there. Then she changed her mind, said, "No, we'll go to the Caribbean," because that was her specialty with cruise ships when she was in the business. I said, "Okay." And then one night, and she said, "I got it. We're going to go to Machu Picchu." And I jumped up in the air like the old Toyota commercial. And I said, "Yeah, Machu Picchu. Okay, but don't change it." And she said, "Oh, do you know where it is?" And I said, "I never heard of it. Where is it?" And, of course, she's sitting in front of the computer. She said, "Well, here's the pictures of it." And I mean, we're going there. And here's the unique thing, Doug, why I decided to propose to her. Because about a week after she made the reservations, I was on my way to work. And the city workers were putting flags up on the street poles, on the street lights, advertising a Machu Picchu expedition at the U.S. History Museum downtown Los Angeles.
How about that?
A week before we left. I said, "You got to be kidding me." So we went to the museum, and I learned all about Machu Picchu, and it was there I said, "This is where I'm going to propose to her."
Good idea.
Yeah, it was so cool. Yeah.
That's what I said. You had a really unique, it was proposal, you know, place rather than the marriage. Did she remember Machu Picchu? You show pictures of it. Does she remember that?
No, I show her pictures all the time, yes.
I know.
But she doesn't really remember, though.
Really? So it's,
she doesn't
how
remember
long,
my name.
I mean, she doesn't remember your name? Really?
Nope. Really?
That's hard to take. How do you deal with that?
She knows who I am, and
yeah.
That's good enough. You know, and I know she knows who I am because there's lots of times we're just laying down in bed watching TV or laying down in bed talking. I'll be reading a book, something. She'll just reach over. She'll just start patting my face, you know, or my shoulder. Or if I'm changing her, she'll just look at me and start, you know, stroking my hair. So she knows who I am. But the name, you know, the name is not important at this, you know, when they have dementia or Alzheimer's. It's the affection she shows for me when I look in her eyes that I know she knows me.
She recognizes
you,
right? She may not know the name, but she recognizes you. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Tell me, what's a day like for a caregiver like you? What do you go through? People may not understand how difficult it is and what kind of jobs you really have to do. You help her get dressed in the morning when she gets,
yes.
You know, when she wakes up, things like that?
It's all in the timing, yeah.
Yeah.
It's all in the timing. And I was told at first that, you know, make sure you take care of yourself first. I'm not talking health-wise. You know, like, you know, make sure you get dressed first before you get, make sure you shower first before you take care of them, all that stuff first. But that doesn't always work. I think it depends on the relationship you have with your loved one and what their dementia is, you know, how do they behave. Because a lot of times when I first started doing that, I'd take a shower, then get her dressed, and by the time I got her dressed, I need another shower.
Yeah,
because it's not easy at the beginning, you know. But I think what makes it easy is, for an example, I'm up at 5:30 almost every day. And what I do is I'll come out here, I'll go in, clean up a little bit, sit and have breakfast. Maybe turn on the news, a little quiet time for me. I turn on something and maybe pick up one of the books I have beside my chair. And I just spend like an hour with just what I need to do. Sometimes it's checking emails and setting up my day. And then at 6:30, 7 o'clock, I'll get her up. But before I get her up, I look for the clothes she's going to wear. I set out the clothes. Then I get her up and I walk her to the bathroom. And she knows what's going to happen in there. I get the scissors, you know, start cutting off her Depends and get her cleaned up. And then I sit her down on the toilet every day. This is every day at the same time, within 30 minutes of each other. And while she's sitting there, I go in, make the bed, or change the covers, whatever day it is. And
right.
While I'm making the bed, I'm checking her breakfast. I'm getting her breakfast ready. And while I'm doing that, I peek in the bathroom. She's okay. She's still sitting there. And I'll give her another 2, 3, 4 minutes. And I go in. She looks okay. Everything's fine. We get up, turn on the shower. I get her in the shower. I have two handrails in the shower. She holds on to them. And while she does that, I start scrubbing her down. I have like a big, on a stick, a scrubby thing, I think you call it.
A loofah.
And then I'll wear a face cloth and I put soap on it and she'll wash her own face. You know, she likes doing that. And then, of course, once that's done, she starts washing the wall. And that's okay. You know, whatever makes her happy while she's doing that, I'm cleaning up the rest of her. Then when we get out, I start drying her off. She dries herself off a little bit. She stands there. And believe it or not, I take a hair dryer and dry her from the waist down. Because what that does is that makes it easier to put her underwear on. You know, it makes it easier to dress her.
Right.
It just, because everything's dry, right up that. I don't mean to get too detailed, but caregivers need to know this. It helps them. And then I put a bathrobe on. We'll come out. We'll sit down. Her breakfast is half ready. I finish up her breakfast, and I make what we call our green drink, which is vitamins. I crush up her meds. She takes two medications. And
okay.
I crush them up. Dissolve them in the drink, and she takes them. And she sits there, and when she's doing that, she'll have her breakfast. I get the rest of my day ready. I make some phone calls, call my contractor, because we have a lot going on, make sure he's got all the guys going on. And then I'll call my broker sometimes once in a while to see, you know, what's going on at the office, if they need me for anything. And then I make the call to my boss who I work for, Sophie. That was her trying to call me on the phone. Because today's the first of the month, rent day, and
right.
I call her and get her set up. Because because I also keep an eye on Sophie as well, you know, because she's, you know, she's not 20 anymore. So I do for much for her as I can to make sure that she's okay and the business is running okay. And I keep an eye on the business. Her son lives up in Northern California. We talk every day and make sure everything's running smooth. And that's pretty much what I do.
Are there other family members who can come help? As you pointed out, her son is in Northern California. Obviously, he's not able to be much help to you. Are there any other family members around in the L.A. area?
Yeah, well, my boss's son is in Northern California. Tessie's son is in South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, that's okay. And then she has sisters that live in Henderson, Nevada.
Okay.
So we don't see much family at all.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
What can she do for herself? What can you count on that she can do? Does she brush her teeth? It's kind of hard to do that for other. I mean, can she do that? Is she interested in doing that?
Once I get her going on it, yes.
Yep.
Yes, she can do it. But I have to turn the brush around because if I just let her go, she'll just brush her bottom teeth. She'll never turn the brush around.
Yeah.
So I guide her through that. So I get her all through that and guide her through that.
Can she feed herself? How about that at the breakfast table? Or do you have to feed her? Has she gotten to that point?
Well, I cut everything up for her because she likes to eat with her hands.
Yeah.
She likes to eat with her fingers, so I turn everything into finger food. But, no, she can pick up a spoon. She just got through eating her bowl of cereal for the day. I call it a bowl of cereal. It's actually like a big bowl of strawberries with cereal in it.
Okay.
So, yeah, part of her fruits and veggies regimen.
What, you know, you have done so much for her and are doing so much for her. You have learned so much about being a caregiver. You didn't know what you were in for when this started, did you? I bet you didn't have any idea.
Oh, no clue whatsoever.
Yeah.
Hear about things. You hear what people talk about things. And, you know, one thing that bothers a lot of us caregivers is it's nice to hear people say, you know, oh, I'm so sorry, da 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 da. But I think what really bothered me the most is when somebody says, you know, I know exactly what you're going through. My grandfather had it. And it's like, were you married to your grandfather? You don't know what I'm going through.
Exactly.
I know they mean well by it, but it just triggers something. The caregiver, it's like, you know, I have a friend. She says, you know, I just don't know what to say anymore. I said, then good. There's nothing to say. I know you love me. I love you. You love Tessie. She loves you. That's all that matters.
Maurice, we're slowly running out of time here. I think what you want to do is so great to be able to share your experiences and go to groups and talk to them and let them ask you whatever question. You know, you'll tell them. You'll tell them what it's really like.
Ixnadi,
how can people best get in touch with you? I know you're on LinkedIn or Facebook. Those who are listening, give them some
LinkedIn,
advice.
Facebook. The best way is Google Maurice J. Jordan.
There you go. Maurice J. Jordan. All right. That's the best way to get in touch with me.
Yeah, you don't put the J in, you may get Michael Jordan.
Oh, yeah. No, okay. Maurice J. Jordan. That's interesting. Okay. I really thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I know there are people out there who can benefit from the advice that you have to give them, and
I hope people take
the opportunity to get in touch with you, and so you can go talk to them. You enjoy doing that too. At the same time, you know you're helping them, right?
I do. I enjoy it very much, and I just want to say, you know, for all you caregivers out there,
yep,
never give up. Always look ahead and do the best you can, and never feel guilty about what you may need to do to get your loved one to do what you need him to do.
That's great advice, Maurice. Thank you so much. We've been talking to Maurice J. Jordan. That's the way to get in touch with him. Google him, okay, if you're interested in learning more about what it's like to be a caregiver, a really lovely caregiver. Thank you, Maurice. Hope we can do it again sometime. Take care now.
I thank you, and I thank the team so much.
You got it. All right.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.